For him in uniform to carry home that little soul. That was Kate Bush. A song called Army Dreamers. Before that, Angel of Dreams by Jane Biella. A woman who I happen to have met, or at least seen, in the Christopher Street subway station. Yes, the woman last year, year before last, was singing for donations, whatever, in the subway. And I recognized her because I had gotten this album about 3 years ago. She was also selling copies of the album. She's a dynamite guitar player and a very good singer. So that was Jane Biella from her album On the Edge. Good morning. My name is Sharon Griffiths, and the name of the show is Heresy. You're tuned to WBAI at 99.5 FM in New York. And I would imagine that I have a few extra listeners this morning due to the oppression of the heat and humidity. I used to do a show called Cosmic Debris, which is now heard in this time slot on the first Sunday of every month with Rocky and Pandora, as opposed to Rocky and Bullwinkle, who are on, I think, Tuesday nights on Channel 2 at 8 o'clock. These are the originals, by the way, as far as the Jay Ward cartoon is concerned. I was afraid that that they were remakes of Rocky and Bullwinkle, which I grew up chortling over as a child. But no, they're the originals. Anyway, back to more serious things. When I did the show Cosmic Debris, I was on at 3:30 to 6 in the morning. And I would come into the station, seeing as how this is New York City after all. This is 1991 after all, and in those days it was 1988 and 89 and all that. And being a modern woman in the big city, with a modicum of sense, I didn't want to travel on mass transit, which is all my pocketbook can ever afford, at 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock or even 1 o'clock in the morning. And I would come in a lot earlier than 3:30. I'd come in at maybe midnight when there were still people on the trains and all that. So I would come in when it was still boiling outside and try to cool off as best I could in here. Sometimes the air conditioning's not working in this room. Sometimes it's not working in the entire station. And I developed a series of helpful hints on how to keep your heart rate down to about 72 and how to keep yourself from going into shock from heat exhaustion and all that, which included stuff like hanging out in the frozen food section of the supermarket at 2 in the morning, going to movies, but of course nowadays with the price of movies, that's a little, that's separating out the middle from the lower class at this point. Various other things. I had up my sleeve to take away the slings and arrows of the over 90 degree temperatures. But I know I myself suffer from lack of sleep, insomnia, I call it, from the heat. I also suffer various other revolting bodily malfunctions, which I won't bore you with. But I'm sure, again, that there are people who are just going, oh, gee, I can't sleep. I might as well listen to the radio. So I hope you're there. I mean, I'm sorry that circumstances are forcing you to be my unwilling audience at this hour of the morning. I'm sorry about the lack of sleep, but I don't think you'll be sorry about the show. The show this morning is on dreams. And what better time to talk about them than when you're up and you're not having them, I guess. So this morning I have a wonderful piece of writing from Robin Morgan, who you may or may not remember as the feminist, activist, poet, editor of many women's liberation tomes. textbooks, although this was before women's studies became an acceptable and even in the state of New Jersey mandatory course at the state schools. And she was the editor for many years, or at least the editor in some capacity, of Ms. Magazine, which disappeared and, like a phoenix, was recreated from its ashes last summer. I remember I spoke to her, actually, because she used to work at the place that I used to work at. She worked there for many, many years back in the 70s when it was a We Are All Feminists Together type organization. And her thing, her particular banner, her cause at this point in the world of feminism is global feminism. How we tend here in America, all us folks here, tend to focus in very tightly on America's problems and America's economy and America's feminism and America's this and that and this and that, without taking into account the entire global picture. And I said a couple of weeks ago, right here in front of this very microphone, that you can't be fooled, although the media, most media, not this media right here, would like you to think that over there, capital O, capital T, will never affect you, as in Chernobyl, as in the horrible Gulf oil fires happening right now, as in the Valdez spill, as in every ecological disaster that is going on right at this very moment. There may be volcanoes erupting. People want to lull you into this false sense of security, saying, oh, it's not my problem. It's over there. They don't speak English. They don't look like me. Their country doesn't look like mine, so therefore I don't have to worry about that. That, unfortunately, is not true, or actually fortunately, because without the input, I believe, of many cultures, many styles of music, of art, of language, of literature, you are not a rounded and total human being. Darn it. So there. By gum, as Simon would say. So this is one world. And I mean, that's very simplistic, but true. And as I said, we used to have a picture on our ceiling of this room, this very room that I'm sitting in, called the Big Blue Marble, which was the wonderful photograph that was taken by whichever mission of astronauts that we sent out there to sort of really prove what explorers and sailors had been saying, you know, for hundreds of years, that this is one world, it is round, and we're all on it. So everything affects us. Everything that happens anywhere affects us anywhere else. It's like a network. It's like skin. If you hurt your finger, you feel it in your brain. If you hurt your toe, you feel it in your brain. And one thing affects something else. So that was Robin's particular calling, and it still is, in the new version of Ms., the non-ad-containing version. She puts a lot of global news, what's happening in India, what's happening in Sri Lanka, what's happening in Russia, what's happening in Yugoslavia, a lot of international news on what the status of women is all over the world in different places. And I think that's really neat. So anyway, back to my phone conversation with this woman. I'm an unabashed fan, and I gushed all over her when I talked to her on the phone. I was picking up the phone. Our receptionist was off having a much-deserved lunch or something, and we all had a pull together in this place, so I was answering the phone. And she was calling about some mail or something that had been left there for her. And I had just finished reading another collection of her short, not fiction pieces, nonfiction pieces, called Going Too Far, which I don't doubt that I will be reading from on this show sometime in the future because the pieces are excellent. And I told her that I was reading it, and she was very surprised and shocked and happy because it's an out-of-print book. It's from 1970-something, or maybe 1980, as far up as 1980. And we talked about, I talked about reading some of her stuff on the radio, and she was quite flattered. And I talked about a magazine that I put out, a woman's quarterly or a feminist quarterly, and I told her that I would put her on the mailing list, and I have, because she, like many, many early 60s and 70s nonconformists, I hate saying beatniks or hippies or whatever, but societal dropouts, perhaps, sounds a little too clinical, but she appreciates, as I do, being one of those societal dropouts, the integrity and the beauty of self-publishing, which is one of the things I do. And so I found this other book of hers at the place where I worked called The Anatomy of Freedom, and the subtitle is Feminism, Physics, and Global Politics. And yes, indeed, the woman can discuss physics in a very intelligent and cognizant manner. So that's really great. But I'm not going to read any of the physics tonight. What I'm going to read is a very long, unfortunately for me, because my stamina, who knows, a long piece on an imagined dialogue between Robin's conscious waking self and her dream self. And once I read it, once I was like halfway through the first page, I knew I had to read this on the air. And I think at the time I had already gotten this show, so at least I had an outlet for it. I read it with a lot of jealousy. I've read some of, I read one early book of Robin's poems. She just had another published, as a matter of fact, and I something about the upstairs garden, I can't remember, and I'm sorry not to do it enough justice, but you could probably... What I really do have to do here is bring in the address and phone number of a wonderful women's bookstore, or as they call it, a bookstore for women and their friends called Judith's Room, and they are on West Street in one of the very high numbers of West Street. It's sort of like you walk down Christopher all the way to West Street and then walk maybe two blocks up, and you will find Judith's Room. I don't know, it's 6-something or 5-something, 100-something Washington Street. And they would probably have her latest book of poetry, although I didn't see it, but then again, I wasn't really looking in the poetry section the day I was there. I was too astounded and in too much delight seeing books that I have wanted since they came out and have been unable to find. I was very happy to find lots of feminist publications, which I thought had gone out of print, died, gone, you know, underground, bankrupt. And I found them there, as in a publication called Sinister Wisdom, a publication called 13th Moon, two very wonderful women's literary magazines. I hope someday to either be published in them or to put out a publication that is equal to their wonderfulness. The other stuff I found there was basic women's newspapers. There's a wonderful paper called New Directions for Women, which is published out of Englewood, New Jersey, which has, to me, it has better coverage and deeper coverage than something like Woman News or Off Our Backs has. They don't have the money and or the staff and or the time and or the resources to do really thorough, in-depth stuff, and also just to throw in wonderful things like the piece I did not get to read last week, which came from New Directions for Women, which is a story by a woman who teaches women's studies somewhere. I'd have to look it up. And she wrote about her four generations of her, the women in her family. And it's just a very touching and sweet article, and they devoted a whole page to it. And they can. They have, like I say, the budget, the resources, and all that. There's also a women's bookstore in New Jersey, I think called Pandora Booksellers, and that I have to get from an issue of New Directions for Women. They have an ad in there. So I can tell you about that stuff next week when I will be here talking about something really refreshing and charming, which is violence against women. But that will be next week's topic. This week's topic, again, is dreams. And as I was saying, I was reading The Anatomy of Freedom by Robin Morgan and reading this dialogue with the dream self and getting very jealous because the woman, she describes in detail some of her magnum opus dreams in this passage, and they are just so fantastic, literally fantastic, and clear and good. They are good, creative dreams, and I do not have those kind of dreams. My dreams are very straightforward, utilitarian, everyday, mundane dreams. They do not help my creative process at all. The things that help me, I'm a very world-rooted, reality-rooted person, I guess. And although being creative is not that hard for me, I'm a writer, I'm a musician, I'm not a composer, I'm just a player of music. So that's like an actor is to a playwright, the way a musician is to a composer. I interpret other people's things, but in the true creative sense, I'm a writer. And I sit down and create things out of nothing in that area. So I was thinking about my own dreams, and I thought that I would take some of the all-time favorites of mine, or actually they're not favorites, they're recurring dreams, or they are that I am still having, or that I have had and stopped having at various points in my life, and I can talk about those. They're not beautiful. They're not special, really, in any kind of way. The one is kind of creative. This one I started having when I was a little kid. And what triggered it, and I know exactly what triggered it, is when I lived in the apartment building I grew up in for 22 years, we had a small, very small wooden elevator, not as small as some that I've seen, but it could fit maybe three people with relative ease. And it was wooden, and it had a big brass rail on it, which eventually went the way of things when the 70s came and unfortunate addicts had to come in and rip things out and sell them. But this was my elevator, and I was very used to having it be my elevator with the wood and all that. One day, it came to the ground floor. I was there to go upstairs. I lived on the fourth floor. And it opened up. There was nobody in it. It opened up, and around the walls was a green quilted padding. And now I understand, today I understand, and I've understood for quite a while, that was sort of standard when one was moving furniture in the 30s, 40s, when lots and lots of elevators were paneled in wood, and you didn't want the big pieces of furniture to gouge pieces of the wood out of the elevator, because that's very impolite. So they had these moving pads, and moving companies used to, there were little out juttings around the top of the elevator that these things hooked onto. And the elevator opened up, and these pads smelled very musty and very dank, like they'd been trapped in a basement or in a trunk or in an attic for many, many years. And I was terrified. This set me off. I was a rather delicate child, not that you'd know it by now, but things that interrupted my routine, that messed with my head, really got to me. So the door opens, and there is this green, moldy, quilted stuff in my elevator, and I think I freaked out. I mean, I must have been not more than 4, 5, or 6 at the time. And from then till I guess I was a late teenager, 17 or something, I had this recurring dream, and it went like this. I would get into the elevator on the 4th floor, and the elevator, I knew that something was radically wrong. I knew that, number one, I was dreaming. Number two, I was going to have that dream again. And number three, it was going to be really uncomfortable until I woke up, when the elevator opened and I saw the furniture padding and I smelled that smell. I would press 1 to go down to the main floor, and the elevator would go down further than 1. It would go to the basement, then it would go to that wonderful secret level below the basement. Now, I know some of you have had dreams like this, or a place that you go that's above the roof, right? So the doors would open, and this sub-basement, which did not exist in reality, was modeled on the basement of my building, which was scary enough. It had corridors and little rooms that went off of corridors and stuff. I used to go down there with my parents when they were doing the laundry, and it was pretty scary stuff. But this was worse. This was many times worse. It was usually not painted, but draped in crazy color quilt patterns. And I would have, the adventures always were different, but the beginning of the dream was always the same. And I don't remember anything that happened really after stepping out onto that sub-basement level. Various things would go on. I would find rooms and discover things in them. And it was never really a wonderful discovery, adventure kind of dream. It was always sort of like, oh, God, what am I going to find in here? Is there going to be a monster? You know, stuff like that. So that was not, those weren't pleasant. I think I recently even had one. I had another one like that, but this was going up. The direction of my life has changed. So instead of dreaming about sub-basements, I'm dreaming about places